Then will you come with me?
Where?
To see Michael. He stood. There is a disused building to the north of the Great Quad. The guards must not see us. Now he had my attention. I nodded. I followed him from the chapel. He looked through the arches, searching for the guards. None appeared. He motioned with his hand. A nearby ghost wheeled towards him and raced down the passage, extinguishing the torches. As the darkness closed in, he took my hand. I had to half run to keep up with his strides. He led me through an archway and out onto a gravel path. The disused building was as daunting as the others. By the dim flush of dawn, I could see a series of arches, rectangular barred windows, and a tympanum with a ring carved into it. Warden led me through the arches, took a key from his sleeve, and opened a rotten door. "What is this place?" I said. "A safe house." He went inside. I followed, pulling the door closed behind me. Warden bolted it. It was pitch black in the safe house. His eyes cast a soft light over the walls. "These were wine cellars once," he said as we walked. "I spent years clearing them. As the highest-ranking Rephite at this residence, I was able to forbid entry to whichever buildings I chose. This safe house is accessible by only a small group of individuals, Michael included."
"Who else?"
"You know who else." "The scarred ones." I shivered. "This was their safe house, their meeting place." He opened a gate in the wall. Beyond it was an opening, not much smaller than a crawl space. "Go through." "What's in there?"
"Someone who can help you."
"I thought you were going to help me." The humans in this city would never trust a Rephite to organize them. They would think it was a trick, as you have always believed.
"It must be you.
You led us before." Warden looked away. "Go," he said. "Michael is waiting." His brow was dark. I wondered how many years of work had come crashing down around him. "It can be different this time," I said. He didn't reply. His eyes were dim, and his skin had a soft sheen. The lack of amaranth was already taking its toll. Not having much of a choice, I crawled into a cool, dark tunnel. Warden closed the gate behind us. "Keep going." I did. When I reached the end, a slim hand grasped mine. I looked up to see Michael, his face lit by a candle. Warden emerged from the tunnel. "Show her, Michael. It is your work." Michael nodded again, beckoning me. I followed him into the darkness. He flicked a switch and a light came on, revealing a large underground room. I looked at the light for a moment, trying to work out why it seemed so strange. Then it hit me. Electricity. I couldn't take my eyes off it. "There's no power here. How did you..." Michael was smiling. "Officially, the power can be restored in only one of the residences, Balliol. That is where the Red Jackets coordinate with the Westminster Archon during the bone seasons," Warden said. "That building has modern electrical wiring. Fortunately, so has Magdalen." Michael led me to the corner, where a velvet drape covered a wide, rectangular object. When he whipped the drape away, I stared. His pride and joy was a computer. Horribly outdated, probably from around 2030. But a computer. A link to the world outside. "He stole it from Balliol," Warden said. The shadow of a smile touched his lips. "He was able to restore electricity in this building and establish a connection with Sion's satellite constellation." "Sounds like you're a bit of a whiz kid, Michael." I sat in front of the computer. Michael allowed himself a shy smile. "What do you use it for?" "We do not often risk restoring the electricity, but we did use it to monitor the progress of Bone Season 20. "Can I see?" Michael leaned over my shoulder. He accessed a file marked Mahani, Page Eva, 7th of March 59. Video footage from a helicopter. The camera zoomed in on my face. I sprinted across the rooftops and took a running leap off the edge of the building. The gap looked impossible. I found myself holding my breath, but the girl on the screen made it. There was a shout from the pilot.
Flux her. I fell 50 feet, and the line caught between my body and the backpack. My unconscious form hung like a stiff. The NVD cameraman laughed, breathless.
Weaver's whiskers, he said. That has got to be the luckiest bitch I've ever seen.
And that was it. Charming, I said. Michael patted me on the shoulder. We were disappointed when you did not evade them, Warden said, though relieved that you survived. I raised an eyebrow. Did you invite your friends over to watch the show? In a manner of speaking. He stood and paced the basement. What do you want me to do? I said. I am giving you the option to call for help. When I looked at him, he said, call the Seven Seals. No. Nashira will get them, I said. She wants Jackson. I'm not bringing him anywhere near this place. Michael's face fell. At least let them know where you are, Warden said. In case it goes awry. In case what goes awry? Your prison break. My prison break. Yes. Warden turned to face me. You asked me about the train. On the night of the bicentenary, it will bring a large group of Scion emissaries from the Citadel. It will also take them back to London. His words sank in. Can go home, I said. The thought was hard to process. When? The eve of the 1st of September. Warden sat on one of the kegs. If you will not contact the Seven Seals, you can use this room to make your plans. They have to be better than mine, Paige. You must remember the lessons of the Syndicate. He looked straight into my eyes. I made an error last time. We planned to move against the Sargus in the day, when most of the city would be dormant. Thanks to the traitor, they were ready for us. But even if we had not been betrayed, they would have sensed our movements from the ether. We must strike when there is already a great deal of activity, when the Sargus are distracted, when their ability to retaliate will be limited by their need to uphold the facade of control. What better time than the bicentenary? I found myself nodding. We could scare a few Scion officials while we're at it. Precisely. He held my eye contact. This is your safe house now. The computer contains detailed maps of Shiel 1 for you to plan your route out of the city center. If you can reach the meadow in time, you can take the train to London. What time will it leave? I do not yet know. I cannot ask too many questions, but Michael has been eavesdropping. We will find out. I looked up at him. You said our aims differed. You want something else. Sion believes we are too powerful to destroy, that we have no weaknesses. I want you to prove them wrong. How? I have long since suspected that Nashira will try to kill you at the bicentenary, to claim your gift. There is one simple way to humiliate her. He placed his fingers under my chin, lifting it. Stop her. I searched his face. His eyes were dim, soft. If I do, I said, I want to claim my favor. I am listening. Liss, I can't reach her. I have the cards, but she might not accept them. I need... A spasm closed my throat. I had to force the next words out. I need your help. Your friend has been in spirit shock for a long time. She will need Amaranth to recover. I know. You are aware that Nashira has stopped my supply. I didn't look away. You have the last dose. Warden sat beside me. I knew what I was asking. He depended on Amaranth. I wonder, Paige. His fingers drummed on his knee. You do not wish to bring your friends here, but if I were to offer you your freedom now, would you take it, if it meant leaving Liss? Is that an offer? Perhaps. I knew why he was asking me. He was testing me, seeing if I was selfish enough to leave someone so vulnerable behind. The risk to me is great, he said. If any of the humans inform the Sargus, I will be severely punished for helping a human. But if you are willing to stay a little longer, to take a risk for me, and for your kind, I will do the same for her. That is the bargain I offer you. I did think about it. For one appalling moment, I thought about abandoning Liss, about seizing my freedom, about returning to London and leaving this place behind me, never to look back. Then shame rose inside me, hot and swift. I closed my eyes. "No," I said. "I want you to help Liss." I could feel his gaze. "Then I will help her," he said. A small group of Harleys had gathered in the shack. Five of them huddled together in the cold, their heads bowed and their fingers clasped. Cyril and Julian were among them. The rain dripped through the cloth they'd stuffed into the gaps between the boards. Liss had been in spirit shock for too long to recover. All they could do was hold a silent vigil at her bedside. If she lived, she would be an amaurotic husk of her former self. If she died, one of them would speak the Threnody, banish her beyond the reach of her captors. Either way, they would lose their most beloved performer, Liss Rymore, the girl who never fell. When Warden arrived, with Michael and I at his side, they backed away. Whispers of fright passed between them. Cyril pushed himself into the corner, wild-eyed. The others just looked. Why was the Blood Consort here? The right hand of Nashira? Why should he disturb the Death Watch? Only Julian didn't move. Paige? I put a finger over my lips. Liss lay on her blankets, covered in filthy sheets. Bits of silk were twisted into her hair, tokens for good luck and hope. Julian gripped her hand, not taking his eyes off the intruder. Warden knelt beside Liss. His jaw was clenched, but he didn't mention his pain. "Paige," he said. "The amaranth." I passed him the vial. The last vial. His last dose. "The cards," Warden said. He was completely focused on his work now. I passed them to him. And the blade. Michael handed me a knife with a black handle. I pulled it from its sheath and passed it to Warden. More whispers. Julian held Liss's hand on his lap, his eyes fixed on me. "Trust me," I said quietly. He swallowed. Warden uncorked the amaranth. He shook a few drops onto his gloved fingers, then dabbed the oil onto Liss's lips and philtrum. Julian kept a firm grip on her hand, though her cold fingers gave no response. Warden touched a little amaranth to each of her temples, then corked the vial and handed it to me. He took the knife by the blade and held it out to Julian. "Prick her fingers." "What?" "I require her blood." Julian looked at me. I nodded. With steady hands, he grasped the handle. "Sorry, Liss," he said. He pressed the tip into each of her fingertips. Tiny beads of blood swelled where it touched. Warden nodded. "Paige, Michael, spread the cards." Together we did. We arranged the new deck into a semicircle. Warden took hold of Liss's hand and wiped her fingers across them, smearing the images with blood. Warden wiped the blade clean with a cloth. He removed his left glove and clenched his fist around it. There was a gasp. Refs never removed their gloves. Did they even have hands? Yes, they did. His hand was large. The knuckles scarred. Another gasp came when he drew the sharp edge of the knife through his skin, opening his palm. His blood seeped from the cut, blurring my perception. He held out his arm and let a few drops of ectoplasm spot each card, just as Aphrodite sprinkled her nectar on the blood of Adonis. I could feel spirits gathering in the room, drawn to the cards, to Liss, to Warden. They formed a triangle, a rift in the ether. He was opening the door. Warden pulled on his glove, picked up the cards and sorted them back into a pile. He placed them on Liss's bare decolletage, so they touched her skin, and folded her hands over them. "And from the blood of Adonis," he said, "came life." Liss opened her eyes. Chapter 27. The Anniversary. September the 1st, 2059. 200 years since a storm of strange lights crossed the sky. 200 years since Lord Palmerston sealed his deal with the Rephaim. 200 years since the Inquisition into clairvoyance began. And most importantly, 200 years since the establishment of Sheol One, and the great tradition of the bone season. A girl stood in front of me, watching me from the gilded mirror. Her cheeks were hollow, her jaw set tight. It still took me by surprise that this hard, cold face was mine. My body was sheathed in a white dress, with elbow-length sleeves and a square neckline. The elasticated fabric cleaved to what little figure I had left. Though Warden had fed me as much as he could, there wasn't always food to give, and he risked raising suspicions if he gave it. The rest of the time, I'd been on Skillion Toke with the Harleys. Nashira had not invited me to another feast. I smoothed down my dress. I'd been given a special reprieve from Yellow in order to attend the ceremony. Nashira had said it was a mark of goodwill. I knew better. I was going prepared. Tucked under the neckline was the pendant Warden had given me. It had lain untouched for weeks, but it might come in useful tonight. There was a small knife concealed in one of my white ankle boots. I could hardly walk in the things, but the Rephaim wanted us to look strong, not beaten and weak. We were expected to stand tall tonight. The chamber was silent, lit by a candle. Warden had gone with the other Rephaim to welcome the emissaries. He'd left me a note, propped on the gramophone. I sat at his desk and ran my fingers over the ink. The time is set. Find me in the guild hall. I threw it into the embers of the fire. In the gloom, I wound the gramophone and moved the needle over the record. This would be the last time I ever heard it play. No matter what happened tonight, I would never return to the Founder's Tower. Soft, echoing voices filled the chamber. I checked the name of the record. I'll be home. Yes, I would. If everything went to plan, I would be home by morning. I'd had enough of seeing the Harleys in poverty, and of having to call them Harleys. I'd had enough of watching Liss eat grease and stale bread because she had nothing else to live on. I had had enough of the Red Jackets and the Emim. I'd had enough of being called 40. I'd had enough of the whole damn place, and everybody in it. I couldn't last another night. Paper hissed on the rug. I knelt by the door and picked up the note that had been pushed under it. Warden's notes had given me an idea. I'd encouraged Julian to organize a group of couriers, like the one Jax had in the Citadel, and keep people in the residences in the loop by sending notes with the Amarotics. Orpheus did it. Already. Lucky. I allowed myself a smile. Felix. I'd made him use a false name for his deliveries. Orpheus was Michael. It hadn't been difficult to persuade Duckett to lend us his particular expertise. Having threatened to expose his little drug den to Nashira. Oh no, please. Have a heart for poor old man. Julian and I had forced him to make up a surprise for the Red Jackets. Something that would make them slow to react when we acted against the Rephaim. With some foot dragging, he'd made it. You'll never get away with this. You'll be chopped up like the first lot. Powdered purple aster cut with sleeping pills. Perfect. I'd used a handful of his own white aster to erase his memory as soon as it was done. I didn't like cowards. We'd slipped the concoction to Michael. He'd been happy to spike the wine the Red Jackets had been given during their pre-bicentenary feast. If all went well, none of them would be fit to defend themselves. I looked out of the window. The emissaries had arrived at 8, dressed in their best, escorted by armed vigilantes. These Scion men and women had come to bear witness to a new agreement, the Great Territorial Act. It permitted the Rephaim to establish a control city in Paris, the first one outside England. Sheol too. Scion would no longer be an empire in embryo. It would be born. It would live. This was just the beginning. If the Rephaim had all the Voyans locked up in penal colonies, there would be no way for the rest of mankind to fight them off. The ether was our only weapon. If nobody could use it, we were sitting ducks. All of us. But I didn't care about that tonight. I cared about getting back to Seven Dials. To the corrupt syndicate. To my gang. To Nick. At that moment, it was all I wanted in the world. The gramophone played on. I sat down at the writing table, looking through the window at the moon. It wasn't full, but halved. There were no stars. Liz, Gillian, and I had spent the last few weeks spreading seeds of discord through the city, using the safe house as our den. Sewell and the overseer couldn't hear us there. Liz was fully recovered from her trauma, and with a new determination to survive. She'd been active in rallying the Harleys. She'd still been nervous, but one night she'd cracked. "I can't live like this anymore," she'd said. "And I can't stop you rebelling. Let's just do it." So we did. Most of the jackets and performers had agreed to help us. Those that had seen Warden heal Liz were more confident, certain of some ref support. Over the weeks we'd pulled our supplies and hidden them at designated checkpoints. A few Harleys had pickpocketed the whitewashed ducat, depriving him of matches and sterno cans. A pair of brave white jackets had tried to venture into the house, but security had tightened since Kraz had been found dead. No one could get close. Instead, we'd had to scavenge. We didn't have many guns between us, but we didn't need guns to kill. Only Gillian, Liz, and I knew where the train was. We hadn't mentioned it to anyone else. Too risky. All the others knew was that there would be a way out. A flare would be used to mark the spot. I swung my legs off the bed. Through the bathroom door, I could see the mirror. I looked like a bisque doll, but I could have looked worse. I could have looked like Ivy. Last time I'd seen her, she was walking behind Thuban with another human. So dirty and thin I'd barely recognized her. But she hadn't been crying. Just walking. Silent. I'd been surprised she was alive after what had happened in the house. Warden hadn't let me get that way. He'd grown more and more reticent as September approached. I supposed it was fear. Fear that this rebellion would fail, like the last one. Sometimes it was more than fear. It occurred to me that he was angry. Angry that he was going to lose me. Lose the fight against Nashira. I shook the thought away. Warden just wanted to protect my gift, like everybody else. There was no point in prolonging it. I had to face the guild hall. I stood and wound the gramophone again. It comforted me, somehow, that the music was still playing. That whatever happened outside, a song would fill the empty chamber for a while. I closed the door of the tower behind me. The night porter had just started her shift. Her hair was threaded into a shining chignon, and she wore rosy lipstick. 2040, she said. "You're expected at the guild hall in 10 minutes. "Yes, thank you, I know." Like I hadn't been told time and time again by the overseer. "I've been asked to remind you of your instructions this evening. You're not permitted to speak with the ambassadors or the Cyan sponsors, unless you're accompanied by a Rephite chaperone. The entertainment begins at 11. You'll be on the stage after the play." "On the stage?" She looked back at her ledger. "Nothing, sorry. That message was for someone else." I tried to look, but she shielded it. "Really?" "Evening." I looked up. David. He wore a suit and a red tie, and he was clean-shaven. My stomach clenched. David did not look drugged. "Michael must have done it. He must have done. I've been sent to take you to the guild hall." He extended an arm. "The Blood Sovereign wants you there now." "I don't need an escort." "They think you do?" He didn't slur his words. He hadn't so much as touched Duckett's mixture. I brushed past him, ignoring his proffered arm, and headed down the street. This was not a good start. A path of lanterns had been lit through the city. The guild hall was situated close to the house, named after the NVD's headquarters in London. The Voyns invited to the Bicentenary were those that had reached their pink or red tunics, or particularly talented Harleys. Nashira had advised it as a reward for their good behavior. They would be allowed to eat and dance with the other humans. In return, they had to make it clear not only that they liked spending time with their keepers, but also that they were very grateful for their rehabilitation. that they liked being hidden away from society in a filthy penal colony, that they liked having limbs ripped off by the MM. Most of them wouldn't have to pretend. Carl was happy. All the Red Jackets were happy. They'd found a place in this colony. But I never would. I was getting the hell out of here. Good trick, David said. With the WAN. I didn't dare look at him. Your boy put in a bit too much. I know Regal when I smell it. But don't worry. It worked in most of them. Far be it for me to spoil the surprise. Two Harleys came rushing down the street. Both looked out of breath. They carried rolls of fabric. They slipped into the street between the old church and the residence of the suzerain. That was the route they'd take to burn the room. They must be putting matches there. Matches and paraffin. Julian had suggested setting fire to the buildings in the center of the city. Turned out he was a damn good tactician. The Harleys would cause the distraction, leaving other streets free for us to go north, to the meadow. They would do it in the early hours, when the emissaries would be growing tired. They won't be going home much later than 2, he'd said. If we do it at midnight, we'll have a solid time to get the ball rolling. We'll be in control. And better early than late. I'd had no complaints. Everything was going to plan, but the clever Red Jacket beside me had the power to destroy it all. Who have you told? I asked David. Let me give you some food for thought, he said, ignoring the question. Do you think Cyan likes to be ordered around by the Rephaim? Of course not. But you believe Nishira when she says they're under her control. Do you not think that one person in the history of Cyan would have thought about fighting them? What are you getting at? Just answer the question. They wouldn't. They're too afraid of the MM. Maybe you're right. Or maybe there's still a grain of sense left in the Archon. What does that mean? When he didn't answer, I stopped in front of him. What the hell does the Archon have to do with anything? Everything. He pushed past me. You get on with your prison break, Street Princess. Don't worry your head about me. He was out of sight before I could answer, past the Victorian entrance hall and into the crowd. My spine tingled. I didn't need a rogue Red Jacket around, especially not someone as cryptic as David. He might claim to hate the Rephaim, but he didn't seem to like me either. He could tell Nishira about the wine. She'd smell a rat at once. Lots and lots of rats. Thousands of candles had been lit inside the guild hall. As soon as I crossed the threshold, Michael in a white jacket hurried me up a flight of stairs, leaving David to seek out the other bone grubbers. Michael's assignment from the refs was to make sure nobody looked bruised or scruffy, a perfect pretext for one last gathering. When we reached the gallery, I turned to face them. Ready? I'm waiting, the white jacket said. Charles, a cryomancer owned by Terabel. He nodded down at the hall, where the Rephaim mingled with the emissaries. Bone grubbers are starting to bite the dust. The refs won't notice until it's too late. Good. I took a deep, steadying breath. Well done, Michael. Michael wore a simple grey suit. He smiled. You got my bag? He pointed. My backpack, packed with medicine, sat under the gallery benches. I couldn't take it now, but the Harleys knew it was here if they needed it. It was one of many stashes of supplies. Paige, Charles said, what time will the flare go up? I'm still waiting to hear. I'll set one off as soon as we find a path. Charles nodded. I looked down at the hall again. So many people were about to risk their lives. Liz, who'd been so afraid. Julian, who'd done so much to help me. The Harleys. The White Jackets. And Warden. I understood now what it meant for him to trust me. If I betrayed him, like the last human, he wouldn't just be scarred. He'd be slaughtered. This was his last chance. But we had to act now, while there was still a flicker of compassion among the Rephaim. If the scarred ones perished, that hope would be lost. The door to the gallery crashed open. Sewell loomed in the doorway. He grabbed Charles by the tunic and hauled him back to the stairs. The Blood Sovereign does not like to be kept waiting, Runt, he said to me. You are forbidden from the gallery. Get downstairs. As quickly as he'd come, he left. Michael glanced at the door. It's time, I said. I squeezed his hand. Good luck. Remember, keep low and look for the flare. Michael nodded. Live, was all he said. I kept my head down as I crossed the ground floor of the guild hall. Nobody noticed me come in. The sign system was used by 9 European countries, including England. Unlike England, however, the rest of them had nowhere to send their clairvoyants. Still, all 9 governments had sent emissaries. Even Dublin, the youngest and most controversial sign city, had sent a delegate. Cathal Bale, an old friend of my father. He was a nervous, indecisive man, crumpled by the duties of his role. A thrill shot through my chest when I first saw him. Maybe he could help us. But then I remembered. He hadn't seen me since I was 5 or 6 years old. He wouldn't recognize me. And I had no name here. Besides, Bell was weak. His party had lost Dublin. The guild hall looked spectacular. It had an ornate plasterwork ceiling, hung with chandeliers, and a vast stretch of open floor. The dark flickered with candlelight and Chopin. The delegates were afforded every courtesy. They were free to gorge themselves on all manner of delicious foods, or talk to one another over mechs. Their amaurosis was a privilege, a right. They were served food by the amaurotic slaves, including Michael, who had been made to look like willing participants in the rehabilitation program. The other amaurotics must have all been too undernourished to appear. High above some dancers was Liss, hanging from the silks, striking poses like an airborne ballerina. She was relying solely upon her own strength to keep from falling to her death. I cast my eye around the room, trying to locate Weaver. He was nowhere in sight. Maybe he was late. Other countries would be excused for not sending their inquisitors, but not England. I could see a few other recognizable Sion officials, including the commander of vigilance, Bernard Hawk. He was a huge man with a bald head and overdeveloped neck muscles, very good at sniffing out voyants. In fact, I'd always suspected he was a sniffer. Even now, his nostrils were flared. I made a note to kill him if I could. An amaurotic offered me a glass of white mex. I refused it. I'd just spotted Cathal Bale. Bale had a glass in his hand, and he kept straightening his tie. He was trying to make conversation with Radmilo Arizina, Deputy Minister of Migration for Serbia. I smiled to myself. Arizina had authorized Danny's transfer to London. Foolishly. I walked towards them.
Mr. Bell?
Bell jerked, spilling his wine. Yes? I looked at Arizina. I'm sorry to interrupt, Minister, but may I speak with Mr. Bell for a moment? Arizina looked me up and down, his upper lip arched. Excuse me, Mr. Bell, he said. I should return to my party. He moved off to the safety of his party. I was left facing Bell. He was dabbing the red stain from his jacket. What do you want, unnatural? He was stammering. I was having a very important conversation. Well, now you can have another one. I took his glass and sipped from it. Do you remember the incursion, Mr. Bell? Bell stopped dead. If you mean the incursion of 2046, then yes. Of course I do. His finger shook. The knuckles were purpled, swollen with arthritis. Why are you asking? Who are you? My cousin was arrested that day. I want to know if he's still alive. You're Irish?
Yes.
He peered at me. What's your name? My name doesn't matter. My cousin's does. Finn McCarthy. He was at Trinity College. Know him?
Yes.
The reply was immediate. McCarthy was at Carrickfergus with the other student leaders. He was sentenced to hang. And did he?
I wasn't privy to the details, but...
Something dark and violent rose inside me. I leaned close to him and breathed into his ear. If my cousin was executed, Mr. Bell,
I will hold you personally responsible. It was your government that lost Ireland. Your government that gave up.
Not me, Bell gasped out. His nose was beginning to bleed. Don't hurt me.
Not you, Mr. Bell. Just your kind.
Unnatural, he bit out.
Get away. I melted into the crowd, leaving him to staunch his bloody nose. I felt myself shaking. I snatched another glass of Mex and threw it back in one gulp. I had always thought Finn must be dead, but some small part of me had clung to his memory, to the idea that he might still be alive. Maybe he was, but I wouldn't find out from Cathal Bell. I caught sight of Nishira, standing below a podium. Beside her was Warden, engaged in conversation with a Greek emissary. After the night bell, he'd received his first amaranth for months. A few drops had transformed him. He wore black and gold, with jacinth at his throat, and his eyes were bright as lamps. I recognized the people closest to Nishira, her elite guard. One of them spotted me, Amelia's replacement, and from the movement of her lips, I guessed she'd informed her boss. Nishira looked over the heads of her guard. A soft laugh escaped her. Hearing it, Warden turned around. His eyes grew very hot, very fast. Nishira beckoned me. I approached, handing my empty glass to an amarotic. Ladies, gentlemen, she said to those assembled around her. I would like to introduce 205940. She is one of our most gifted clairvoyants. There was a murmur from the delegates. Intrigued. Repulsed. This is Alois Minot, Grand Raconteur of France, and Birgitta Jada, Chief of Vigilance in the Science Citadel of Stockholm. Minot was a small man, stiff in posture, with no distinguishing features. He nodded. Jada just stared at me. She was in her mid-30s, with thick blonde hair and eyes like olive oil. Nick had always called this woman the Magpie. Her reign of hell in Stockholm was notorious. I could tell she couldn't stand to be near me. Her pale lips were pulled tight over her teeth, as if she was about to bite. I wasn't exactly relishing her presence either. I don't want to name me, Jader said, confirming my suspicions. But would you not rather they were here, with us, than on your streets? Nishira said. They can do no harm here, Birgitta. We do not let them. Once she all three is established, you will never have to look at a clairvoyant again.
A third penal colony? Did they have plans for Stockholm too?
I didn't want to think about a she all three with the Magpie as its procurer. Jader didn't take her eyes off me. She had no aura, but I could read the loathing in every inch of her face. I can't wait, she said. The pianist stopped playing, prompting a round of applause. The dancing couple separated. Nishira glanced up towards a large clock. The hour draws near. Her voice was very soft. Excuse me, Jader said. She turned and marched back to the suites, leaving an open space between Warden and me. I didn't dare meet his eyes. I must address the emissaries. Nishira looked at the stage. Arcturus, stay with 40. I will need her in due course. So she did plan to kill me in public. I looked between the two of them. Warden inclined his head. Yes, my sovereign. He took me roughly by the arm. Come, 40. Before he could lead me away, Nishira's head whipped around. She grabbed my wrist, pulling me back towards her.
Did you hurt yourself, 40?
The steri-strips on my cheek were long gone, but there was still a hairline scar from the broken glass. I struck her. Warden kept a tight grip on my arm. She disobeyed me. I punished her. I shook like a rag doll, one arm in each of their hands. They looked at each other over my head. Good, Nishira said. After all these years, you are learning what it means to be my consort. She turned her back on him and walked into the crowd, parting the emissaries. The musician, whoever it was, began to play some well-chosen piano chords, accompanied by ghostly vocals.
I was sure I recognized the voice, but I couldn't place it. Warden led me to the side of the hall, to the long space underneath the gallery, and leaned down to look at me. Is everything ready? I nodded. The musician really did have a beautiful voice, a kind of wispy falsetto. It brought on another vague surge of recognition. My companions and I performed a séance last night, Warden said, his voice barely audible. There will be spirits to command. Human spirits. The victims of Bone Season 18. They will side with you before the ref I am. What about the NVD? Are they here? They are not permitted in the guild hall unless they are called. They are stationed by the bridge. How many? 30. I nodded again. The emissaries had all at least one bodyguard. But they were SVD. They didn't want unnaturals protecting them. Fortunately for us, the SVD couldn't use spirit combat. Warden looked up to the ceiling, where Liss was climbing the silks. Liss seems to have recovered. Yes. Then we are even. All is settled. All debts are paid, I said. The Threnody. It made me think of what was still to come. What if Nishira succeeded in killing me? All will go to plan, Paige. You should not give up hope. He looked at the stage. Hope is the one thing that might still save us all. I followed his gaze. The bell jar and the lifeless flower stood on a covered plinth. Hope for what? Change. The music drifted to a close, and applause rang out from the edges of the dance floor. I wanted to look, to find out who had been playing, but I couldn't see over the heads of the emissaries. A red jacket stepped onto the stage. 22. His lopsided gait said just how much of Duckett's mix he'd had. Ladies and gentlemen, he said. The suzerain, Nishira Sargas, blood sovereign of the race of Rephaim. He staggered down. I bit back a smile. That was at least one less red jacket to deal with. Nishira stepped up to the podium, to continued applause from her audience. She looked at us. Warden looked back at her. Ladies and gentlemen, she said, never breaking his gaze. Welcome to the Saiyan capital of Sheol One. I would like to extend our thanks for your attendance at our celebration tonight. It has been 200 years since our arrival to Britain. We have come a long, long way since 1859. As you can see, we have done our utmost to make our first control city into a place of beauty, respect, and above all, compassion. Our rehabilitation system allows young clairvoyants to enter our city and receive the best possible quality of life, like animals in a menagerie. Clairvoyance, as we know, is not the fault of its victims. Like a disease, it preys on the innocent. It afflicts them with unnaturalness. Sheol One celebrates 200 years of good work today. As you can see, it has been a successful venture, the first of many seeds we wish to plant. In exchange for your understanding, we have not only provided a humane means of removing clairvoyance from ordinary society, but prevented hundreds of emite attacks on the Citadel. We are a beacon to which they are drawn, like moths to a flame, as the saying goes. Her eyes were their own beacons in the gloom. But the Emim's number grows greater every day. This colony will no longer be a sufficient means of protection. Emim have been sighted in France, Ireland, and more recently, Sweden. Ireland. That was why Cathal Bael was here. That was why he looked so nervous, so frightened. It is paramount that we establish Sheol too, that we light another flame, Nishira said. Our method has been tried and tested. With your help and your cities, we hope that the flower of our alliance can finally bloom. Applause. Warden's jaw was set. His expression was terrible to see. Angry. Brutal. Murderous. I'd never seen him look that way. There are a few minutes left until the play, written by our human overseer. In the meantime, I would like to introduce my partner, the second Blood Sovereign, who wishes to make a brief announcement. Ladies and gentlemen, Gomesa Sargas. She extended a hand. Before I could even register that anyone else was there, it was taken by a larger one. My breath caught. He was dressed in black robes, with a collar that reached the tops of his ears. He was tall and lean, golden-haired, with gaunt features. His lips pulled downward, as if weighed down by the rows of eye-sized gems around his neck. He seemed older than the other Ephraim. Something about his bearing, and the sheer mass of his dreamscape. I could feel that dreamscape like a wall against my skull. It was the most ancient and terrible thing I'd ever felt in the ether. "Good evening." Gomesa looked at us with the neutral Rephite expression, that of the impassive observer. His aura was like a hand across the sun. No wonder Liss was so afraid of him. She was wrapped in her ribbons, silent and still. After a moment, she dropped down to the gallery. "To those humans who reside in Sheol One, I apologize for my long periods of absence. I am the Rephaim's primary emissary to the Westminster Archon. As such, I spend much of my time in the capital city with the Inquisitor, discussing how best to increase the efficacy of this penal colony. As Nashira has said, it is a new beginning that we celebrate today. A new age is dawning. An age of perfect collaboration between human and Rephaim, two races that have been estranged for far too long. We celebrate the end of an old world, where ignorance and darkness reigned. We vow to share our wisdom with you, as you have shared your world with us. We vow to protect you, as you have sheltered us. And I promise you, friends, we will not allow our arrangement to falter. Here purity rules with an iron rod, and the flower of transgression will forever remain withered." I glanced at the withered flower in the bell jar. He looked at it like he might look at a slug. "Now," he said, "enough probity. Let the play begin." Chapter 28. The Prohibition. The overseer swept out, dressed to dazzle. He wore a long red cloak, done up to the neck, that covered his entire body. He bowed. "Salutations, ladies and gentlemen, and a warm welcome to Sheol One. I am the overseer, Beltrame. I look after the human population of the city. A particularly heartfelt welcome to those of you who have come from unconverted parts of the continent. Fear not. After the show, you shall have the chance to alter your cities into Cyan citadels, as many other cities have. Our program enables governments to root out and segregate clairvoyants while they are still young, without the expensive necessity of mass execution." I tried not to listen. Not all countries used Nightkind to execute clairvoyants. Many used the lethal injection, or a firing squad, or worse. "We have already made plans for Sheol II, to be established in association with Cyan citadels of Paris and Marseille, which will become the first French satellite citadels." Applause. Minot smiled. "Tonight, we hope to pin down potential locations of at least two more control cities on the continent. But before all that, we have a little play to show you, to prove that many of our clairvoyants use their abilities to do good. Our play will remind us of the dark days before the Rephaim arrived, when the bloody king still held power. The king who built his house on blood." The clock chimed. I watched as the performers walked out in a line, 20 of them. They were going to perform the life story of Edward VII, from his purchase of a seance table and the 5 murders, to the knife in his quarters and his flight from England with the rest of his family. The beginning of the so-called epidemic, and a testimony to why Cyan needed to exist. Liss was up there, standing in the background. On either side of her were Nell, the girl who'd been her substitute when she was in spirit shock, and a seer who I thought was called Lottie. All three were dressed up as some of the Bloody King's victims. In the center of the stage, the overseer threw off his cloak to reveal a monarch's regalia. The crowd jeered. He was playing Edward in his days as heir apparent to Queen Victoria, decked in furs and jewels. The first scene seemed to take place in his bedchamber, where a garlish calliope piped out Daisy Bell. The Harley actor nearest the audience introduced himself as Frederick Ponsonby, First Baron Sisonby, Edward's private secretary. It was through his eyes that the play would be seen. "Your Highness," he said to the overseer, "shall we take a turn outside?" "Do you have your short jacket, Ponsonby?" "Only a tailcoat, Your Highness." "I thought everyone must know," the overseer boomed, with a risibly aristocratic English accent, "that a short jacket is always worn with a silk hat at a private view in the morning, and those trousers are quite the ugliest pair I have ever seen in my life." Jeering, hissing, that licentious beast had dared to call himself Victoria's heir. Ponsonby turned back to the audience. "It was after a long awakening of afflictions, for example with my tailcoat and my poor trousers," laughs, "that the prince grew tired of his finery. On that very afternoon, he asked me to accompany him on an excursion. Oh, my friends, human suffering has never surpassed that of the queen, watching her son tread the path towards evil." I glanced over my shoulder to see Warden's reaction, but he wasn't there. The repartee between Edward and Ponsonby went on for a while. Each scene was engineered to show Edward as a cruel, lustful idiot and a failure to his mother. I found myself watching, fascinated. They exaggerated his role in Prince Albert's death to a ridiculous degree, even introducing a duel. The widowed Queen Victoria made an appearance, wearing her small diamond crown and veil. "I never can, or shall, look at him without a shudder," she admitted to the audience. "He is as unnatural to me as a changeling." They cheered. She was a bastion of goodness, the last unsullied monarch before the plague. As the emissaries were charmed by the actress, I kept a sharp eye on the clock. Nearly half an hour had elapsed, and I still didn't know what time the train left. Next was the crux of the play, the séance. Red lanterns were brought onto the set. When I looked back at the stage, I had to stifle a laugh. The overseer was really getting into his role. "Earthly power is not enough," he said, almost panting with the sheer evil of his character. The séance table was out, and he was waving his arms in circles above it. "The Victorian era, they say. But what will Edward's era be? What king can truly rise, encumbered by the shackles of mortality?" He leaned over the table, rocking it with his hands. "Yes, rise, rise from the shadows, rise through the gateway, spirits of the dead. Come into me and into my followers. Breed in the very blood of England." As he spoke, the red lanterns moved from the stage, carried by actors dressed in black. They represented the unnatural spirits. They scattered across the room, grabbing at people, making them shriek. They were the plague of unnaturalness. The music and the laughter of the actors was too loud. My head was spinning. The overseer roared his incantations. In the darkness and confusion, Warden took my arm. "Quickly." His voice was a thrum against my ear. "Come with me." He led me to the trap room, the small dark space below the stage, piled high with storage crates. The only light was what filtered through the boards, red, like the lanterns. Dense velvet drapes hung down the length of one side of the room, hiding us from the hall above. It wasn't easy, in this darkened space, to think of what I might soon face upstairs. It was quieter here. The actors danced above us, but the sound was muffled by the boards. Warden turned to face me. "You will be the play's last scene, the final act." His eyes were hot. I heard her with Gomesa. My skin prickled. We knew it was coming. Yes. I'd known from the beginning that Nashira was going to kill me, but hearing it from him made it all the more real. A part of me had hoped she might wait. Wait a few days, giving me a chance to get away with the others on the train, but Nashira was cruel. Of course she wanted to do it in public, before Sion. She wouldn't risk keeping me alive. The light from his eyes made the shadows deeper. There was something different about them. Something raw, something volatile. Cold tremor seized my legs and abdomen. I sank into a crate.
I can't fight her, I said. Her angels.
No, Paige. Think.
For months she has waited, biding her time until you could possess another body. If you did not exhibit that skill, there was a danger that she might not gain it from you. She made you a yellow jacket to ensure your life was never again endangered by the Emim. She placed you under the protection of her own consort. Why would she do so much to preserve you if you did not have a gift she not only wanted, but feared? You taught me how to do it all that training on the meadow, the butterfly and the deer, exercising my spirit. You led me to my death. I was assigned by her to prepare you. That was why she allowed me to take you into Maudlin, he said. But I do not intend for her to have you. I have committed myself to developing your gift. But for you, Paige, not for her. I didn't answer. There was nothing to say. Warden tore one of the drapes. With a soft touch, he started to remove my makeup. I led him. My lips were numb, my skin like ice. I could be dead in the next few minutes, drifting around Nashira in a state of mindless servitude. When he was finished, Warden stroked my hair back from my face. I let him do it. I couldn't focus.
Don't you dare, he said. Don't you dare let her see it. You are more than that. You are more than what she wants to do to you.
I'm not afraid. His gaze ran across my face.
You should be, he said. But do not show it. Not for anything.
I'll show her what I like. You're in no position to give me orders. I disengaged my head from his hands.
You should have just let me go. You should have let Nick take me back to Dials. That was all you had to do. I could be home by now.
He leaned down so our faces were level. I brought you back, he said, because I could not find the strength to fight her without you. But for that same reason, I will do everything in my power to see you safely to the Citadel.
Silence fell. I didn't break his gaze.
Your hair must be tied. His voice was different, quieter. He pressed an ornamental comb into my hand. The comb was cold. My fingers shook.
I don't think I can.
I took a deep, slow breath. Will you do it? He said nothing, but he did take the comb, as if he was handling the very finest gossamer. He swept my hair to one side of my neck, then gathered it into a knot. Not a psyche knot, like I usually did, an elaborate, braided coiffure that drew together at my nape. His calloused fingers ran over my scalp, arranging the comb. The softest tremor ran down my spine. Warden released my hair, and it held. His touch had felt strange, warmer. It was only when I saw his hands that I realized he wasn't wearing gloves. I reached up to my hair, traced the intricate design. Hands as large as his should never have achieved such complexity. The train will leave at 1 o'clock precisely, he said against my ear. The entrance is under the training ground, exactly where we stood. I'd waited so long for those words. If she kills me, you have to let the others know. A thickness rose in my throat. You have to lead them. His fingers brushed the back of my arm. I will not need to lead them. My body ran with shivers, but not the kind I expected. When I turned my head to look at him, he tucked a stray curl behind my ear. His other hand came to rest on my abdomen, pressing my back to his chest. The warmth of him was comforting. And I could feel his hunger. Not for my aura, but for me. He nuzzled his head against my cheek. His fingers traced my collarbone. His dreamscape was close. His aura intertwined with mine. My sixth sense heightened, taking him in. Your skin is cold, he said throatily. I never... He stopped. My fingers pushed between his naked knuckles. I kept my eyes open. His lips moved to my jaw. I guided his hand to my waist. The lure of his touch was excruciating. I couldn't flinch. I couldn't refuse him.
I wanted this, before the end. I wanted to be touched, to be seen, here in this dark room, in this red silence. I lifted my chin, and his lips closed over mine. I had always known there was no heaven. Jax had told me so, many times. Even Warden had said so. There was only white light, the last light. A final rest on the edge of consciousness. The place where all things met an end. Beyond that, who knew? But if there was a heaven, this was what it would have felt like. Touching the ether with my bare hands. I could never have anticipated this. Not from him. Not from anyone. I clutched his back, pulling him up against me. He caught the nape of my neck in his hand. I could feel each callus on his palms. His breath was hot. The kiss was slow. Don't stop. Don't stop. I couldn't think of anything but those words. Don't stop. His hands ran up my sides, my back, and clasped me. He lifted me onto a crate. I placed my hand against his neck. I felt the thick beat of him. His rhythm. My rhythm. My skin burned. I couldn't stop. I'd never felt anything like this in my life. This rising in my chest. This need to touch. His lips nudged mine apart. My eyes opened. Stop. Stop, Paige. I started to pull my head away. A word escaped me. Maybe no. Maybe yes. Maybe his name. He framed my face in his hands, traced my lips. His thumbs ran over my cheeks. Our foreheads touched. My dreamscape scorched. He set fire to the poppies. Don't stop. Don't stop. Only a moment passed. I looked at him, and he looked at me. A moment. A choice. My choice. His choice. Then he kissed me again. Roughly this time. I let him. His arms came around me, lifting me. And I wanted it. I did. Too much. So much. My hands were in his hair, gripping his neck. Don't stop. His lips were on my mouth, my eyes, my shoulders, and the hollow of my throat. Don't stop. He ran his palms over my thighs. Firm, bold strokes. Full of surety. Awakening. I opened his shirt. My fingers slid over his chest. I kissed his surging neck, and he grasped a thick handful of my hair. Don't stop. I'd never touched his skin. It was hot and smooth, and it made me want the rest of him. My hands went under his shirt, found his back, scars under my fingers, long, cruel welts. I'd always known they were there, the scars of a traitor. He tensed under my touch. Paige, he said softly, but I didn't stop. He made a low sound in his throat, and his lips came back to mine. I wouldn't betray him. Bone season 18 was history, and it would not repeat itself. 200 years was more than enough. My sixth sense shook me from the haze. I pulled back from Warden. He kept his hands on my waist, locking me against him. Nashira was there, half hidden in the shadows. My heart squeezed out a sickening thump. Run, my numb brain said. But I couldn't run. She'd seen everything. She could see everything now. My skin, glossed with sweat, my puffy lips, my wild, disheveled hair. His hand still clasping my hips. His shirt open. My fingers still trespassing on his skin. I couldn't move them. I couldn't even shift my gaze. Warden drew round behind me. I forced it on her, he said. His voice was thick and rough. Nashira said nothing. She stepped into the dim light that filtered through the drapes, and there was something in her hands. The bell jar. I looked into it, my ears ringing. Inside was a flower. A flower in bloom. Strange and beautiful. Its 8 petals wet with nectar. The flower that had once been dead. There can be no mercy, she said. For this. For a moment Warden looked at the flower, his eyes aglow. His gaze moved to meet hers. Nashira dropped the bell jar. The glass crashed against the floor, startling me from my paralysis. I just destroyed everything.
Arcturus Mazatim, you are my blood consort. You are warden of the Mazatim. But this cannot happen again.
Nashira stepped towards us.
There is only one way to stop treachery, and that is to make an example of traitors. I will hang your flesh from the walls of this city.
Warden didn't move.
Better there than used for your pleasures. Always so fearless. Or foolhardy.
She touched her fingers to his face.
I will see to it that all your old companions are destroyed.
No. I stepped out from behind him. You can't. I didn't have time to move. The blow she gave me knocked me off my feet. The corner of a crate glanced across my head, opening a cut above my eye. My hands went straight into the broken glass. I heard Warden say my name, his voice shot with rage. But then Thuban and Sichula were there, her trusted servants, the ones that wouldn't let him go. Thuban took the end of his knife and smashed it into Warden's head, but he didn't fall. He wouldn't kneel before the Sargus this time.
I will deal with your offences later, Arcturus. I divest you of your position as blood consort.
Nashira stepped away from him.
Thuban, Sichula, take him to the gallery.
Yes, my sovereign, Thuban said.
He grasped Warden by the throat.
Time to pay your dues, flesh traitor.
Sichula dug her fingers into his shoulder, ashamed of her traitor cousin. He didn't say a word.
No, no, it couldn't end like this. Not like Bone Season 18. He was no longer blood consort. He was ruined.
I put out the last ray of light. I sought Warden's gaze, desperate for something to hope for, to salvage. But his eyes were still and dark, and all I could feel was his silence. Between them, Thuban and Sichula dragged him away. Nashira walked through the broken glass. I stayed where I was, on the floor, in the wreckage. Bitter heat rose to my eyes. I was such a fool. What was I thinking? What was I doing?
Your time has come, Dreamwalker.
At last. Blood seeped from my head wound. He waited long enough.
You ought to rejoice. From what I understand, Dreamwalkers crave the ether.
Tonight you can join with it.
You'll never have this world.
Now I looked up, and my body was shaking, with anger, not with fear.
You can kill me. You can claim me. But you can't claim us.
The Seven Seals are waiting. Jackson Hall is waiting. The entire syndicate is waiting for you. I raised my chin and stared her in the face.
Good luck.
Nashira pulled me to my feet by my hair. Her face came close to mine.
You could have been more, she said. So much more.
As it happens, you will soon be nothing. Everything that you were will be mine. With a push of her arm, she flung me into a Rephite's iron grip.
Al-Safi, take this bag of bones to the stage.
It is time for her to surrender her spirit. I didn't stop to think as Al-Safi walked me up the steps. A bag was over my head. My lips were sore, my cheeks were hot. I couldn't breathe or think straight. Warden was gone. I'd lost him. My only ref ally, and I'd let him get caught. Nashira wouldn't just kill him. Not when he'd stooped so low as to touch a human with his bare hands. It was more than betrayal. By kissing me, holding me, the blood consort had debased his entire family. He was no longer a worthy candidate. He was nothing. Al-Safi kept a firm grip on my arm. I was about to die. In less than 10 minutes, I would join with the ether, like the other spirits. My silver cord would break. I would never be able to return to my own body, the body I'd inhabited for 19 years. From then on, I would have to serve Nashira. The bag came off my head. I was at the side of the stage, watching the end of the play. Two refs, Al-Safi and Terabel, stood on the other side of me. Terabel leaned down to my level.
Where is Arcturus?
They took him to the gallery, Thuban and Sichula.
We will deal with them. Al-Safi released my arm. You must delay the Blood Sovereign, Dreamwalker.
I'd known Terabel was one of Warden's collaborators, but not Al-Safi. He didn't look like a sympathizer, but neither did Warden. The Overseer fled the stage, his costume drenched in artificial blood, leaving his knife behind him. His screams for mercy echoed through the guild hall. The emissaries cheered as a group of actors chased him out onto the street, all wearing Saiyan uniforms. The applause was deafening. It continued as Nashira walked up the steps, back onto the stage.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your kindness. I am pleased you enjoyed the production.
She didn't look pleased.
I am also pleased to end the evening to give you a brief demonstration of our justice system here in Sheol One. One of our clairvoyants has displayed such disobedience that she cannot be allowed to live. Like the Bloody King, she must be banished beyond the reach of the Amorotic population, where she can do no more harm. 2059-40 has a history of treachery. She hails from the Derry County of Tipperary, deep in the south of Ireland, a region long since associated with sedition.
Cahill Bell shifted his weight uncomfortably. A few of the emissaries murmured.
After coming to England, she immediately became embroiled in the crime syndicate of London. On the night of March the 7th, she murdered two of her fellow clairvoyants, both underguards in the service of Saiyan. It was a cold-blooded, cruel affair. Neither of Forty's victims died quickly. On that same night, she was brought to Sheol One.
Nashira paced across the stage.
We hoped we could educate her, teach her to control her gift. It pains us to lose young clairvoyance. It also pains me to admit that our endeavor to reform Forty has failed. She has repaid our compassion with insolence and brutality. There is no option left for her but to face the judgment of the Inquisitor.
I looked past her. There was no scaffold on the stage, no gurney, no block. But there was a sword. My blood stopped in its veins. That was no ordinary sword. Gold blade, black hilt. That was the wrath of the Inquisitor, the sword that beheaded political traitors. It was only used when clairvoyant spies were discovered within the Westminster Archon. I was the daughter of a prominent Saiyan scientist, a traitor in the ranks of the Naturals. Al-Safi and Terabel disappeared beneath the stage. I was left facing Nashira. She turned her head.
Come forward, Forty. I didn't hesitate.
There was a hush as I emerged from behind the drapes.
Traitor,
Cahill Bell called, followed by some booing from the emissaries. I still didn't look at them. It was rich of Bell to call me a traitor. I walked with my head held high, forcing myself to focus only on Nashira. I didn't look at the emissaries. I didn't look at the gallery, where Warden had been taken. I stopped a few feet away. Nashira circled me, slowly. When she wasn't in my line of vision, I looked straight ahead.
You may wonder how we deal out justice here.
With the noose, perhaps, or the fire of ancient days. Here is the Inquisitor's sword, delivered from the Citadel. She indicated the wrath. But before I swing it, I wish to exhibit something else. The great gift of the Rephaim. There was a murmur.
Edward the 7th was a curious man. We know all too well that he meddled in things that should not be meddled with. He tried to control a power beyond human knowledge. A power we Rephaim know very well.
Birgitta Jader was staring at the stage, her brow furrowed. Several of the emissaries looked at their SVD bodyguards, Bell among them.
Imagine the most powerful kind of energy on Earth.
Nashira held out a hand towards a nearby lantern.
Electricity.